What do they do? They go. Sorry.
No, say it. Say.
They still doubt whatever right. that they have seen.
They still doubt, and they still go back to doing their negative things. What is that? That is a lesson of human beings. And what is that lesson? That lesson is when you don't have that feeling in you, you don't have that experience in you, when you don't have that kind of mind in you, it's very hard to believe in someone else. It's very hard. Look at Jesus Christ, how much miracles he showed, how much compassion. I mean, the New Testament is so different than the Old Testament. The Old Testament is cruelty. It is it's a mean, jealous, angry, vengeful desert God who, if you don't worship him, you put other gods above him, he'll get you. That's the God of Israel, right? He's an evil, very jealous, very petty desert God. That's what, in the Old Testament, God is made out like that. And the thing is this, that when he's unhappy, he gets you. He'll kill you, he'll drown you. He'll expect sacrifices. I mean, what kind of God expects you to sacrifice lambs every month? You know, on the Sabbath day, every Friday. Well, what is that? He's bloodthirsty. And when he's not happy, he gets revenge. And if he's not happy with you, you don't do as he says. What does he do? He actually curses your generations in the future. I mean, look, Eve made a little mistake. She ate a little apple. All of us has got to suffer for it. All of us gets kicked out of it. I mean, what does that tell you about God? But you see, what I read is that that's not God. That's a man-made God. That's someone man-made up. Because he has the characteristics of a human, not a God. The characteristic jealousy, hatred, you know, covetousness, all the things he tells us not to do in the Old Testament, he does. All the things he tells us not to do in the Ten Commandments. But in the Old Testament, God is doing to people. I mean, he drowned the whole planet for 40 days and 40 nights. Right or not? He drowned. He kicked you out of the Garden of Eden. He made everybody, just for building a tower, and they tower of Babel. They shot one teeny little arrow in the sky, and he's so pissed off, everybody wakes up in a different language. And you speak Hubei girl language, and I speak Tibetan. You speak Hubei girl, and I speak Tibetan. I mean, because they shot one teeny little arrow at him, like, hello? You're as big as the universe. And it's one arrogant king. Why don't you just slap him and tell him to get lost and not punish everybody on the planet? What is that? That is a fear tactic. That is not a god. That is man controlling people through saying there's a god who does it. He is vengeful. He is very bloodthirsty. He is very, very angersome, and he's jealous. That's the God of the Old Testament. The New Testament is very different. God is love. I mean, what happened? He went for therapy. He went for counseling. Hi, my name is God, and I'm kind of upset with my children because they don't worship me. Oh, poor bitch. What happened? I mean, what do you think? The counselor said to God, poor bitch. Tell me about it, God. You know what I mean? And like, think about it. The God of the New Testament is very different, but still vengeful, still covetous, still angersome, but much less, because Jesus painted a different picture. Even still, through Jesus' love, his compassion, he really was a nomad. He really had no attachments. Even still, how many people doubted him to the point of having him killed? Now, why would a God who loved people so much and loved everybody so much have his son get slaughtered? And then allow that to happen, and then when his son gets slaughtered and humiliated and beaten, then you punish everybody for it. I don't understand. It all does not make sense. So what I'm trying to say is if you yourself do not experience compassion, if you yourself do not experience some sort of forgiveness, or you have a light heart, or you have a kind heart, or a generous heart, and you have not developed that, you will not think anybody else have it. Even if the kindest person standing in front of you, you'll have the wrong view. And that's the fact of life. So therefore, having a guru and respecting a guru is not about the guru. It's about yourself. It's about yourself. Because why? If you reach someone like Mother Teresa's level, you will see compassion and love and the need to nurture and take care of people everywhere. Even if they're mean to you, you will see them with a loving eye everywhere. Even your worst enemy, you will see with a loving eye. If you develop Mother Teresa's level. If you're a nasty, mean little person who always wants to get revenge, Mother Teresa can stand in front of you and you see someone, you think, what she wants? What's her motive? That's the mind. That's why I say people who have doubts and people always, you know, people who hear a little rumor and they run away. They don't check for themselves, they don't see for themselves, and they run away immediately. It tells you something about their life. And they will run away about everything in their life. They may be making money, they may get a good post in their company, but it doesn't mean they are happy. They make people happy, or they are fulfilled, or they make people fulfilled, or people around them will be happy, because they simply run away. And same thing with a few people who have left. They feel an emptiness, and they feel a sadness, and they're demanding for attention. I mean, the one recent event, the most recent one, your friend, right, who left, what he is doing for attention is much less than the other people. Much, much less. But the other people that you guys have experienced, what they've done for attention, how I talk to you guys, what I do with you guys, and how I react with you guys is exactly how I've been reacting with all these people. In fact, I was very moved today because I met an old friend of mine, Tan Lin Peng. I've known her for 16 years, you know. And she said to me today, and it really made me very happy, because she says, Rinpoche, you've never changed. You're always the same old Rinpoche. I love it. Remember she said that? And it moved me. And to have her say that to me made me feel like, oh. Because I know what she meant, because she told me a long time ago that she finds that I'm very sincere and she believes in me 100%. And she finds me very, very, very honest. And when she said that, it was a great compliment from her, because she's straight, she doesn't play, she doesn't joke, and she's very direct. Very direct. And the thing is this, when she said to me, God, you haven't changed. I was so happy with myself in a good way. I said, yes. And I said to her, no matter how poor I get, I will never change. No matter how rich I get, I will never change. I will never forsake my vows. I will never, ever forsake any of the vows I've taken. You see, what keeps me aligned is my vows. And so now I'm getting results. When I hold my vows of not getting revenge, that's a bodhisattva vows. When I hold my vows of not getting people back, or not hurting people, or not stealing, or deceiving them, or trying to have an ulterior motive, or talking one way, meaning another. I haven't done that in years. 20, 30 years since I took my vows, you know? Actually, I don't do that. And I'm getting results. What's the result? What is the result? I have wonderful friends. I have wonderful friends. You know, I have people that respect me. People buy me food. People pull my chair out. People carry my clothes. People give me money. People sweep my room. I mean, come on. This is not the Middle Ages. Why? Why do they do this? They must sense that there's some kindness in me, that I have some good motivation, that I really care, and that they like to be around this type of person. That maybe even I can believe that I changed their lives a little bit. Where did this come from? My vows. So for my vows of holding them for a little while, I have some superficial worldly benefits, such as money and health and assistance and respect. But on a higher level, I'm much happier. Okay, don't talk about bodhicitta and attainments and powers and divination and, you know, don't talk about that. I'm much happier because look at all the friends I have. You know, if I'm sick, I know I'll be alright. I know that when I'm old, people will help me. And how many people even have that basic help, that when they're old, people will take care of them? That when they're sick, people will take care of them? That when they're hungry, people will run out and look for food for them? And that when they run out of money, I know that if I run out of money right now, I know everybody will get together and give me money and take it. I know I'll be alright for the rest of my life. Why? Because Tan Rinpoche is such a fabulous, wonderful person? No. Because Tan Rinpoche believed in his group that if we transform ourselves, we can change our lives and everybody else's lives. And I did that. So if I keep on holding my vows, and I become even stricter, and I work harder, and I do my practice more, and I develop my mind more, and I become even more compassionate, and I push myself to forgive more and benefit people, even in difficult situations, even people that bug me, that I still pay their rentals, if I do that, you know what will happen? Maybe I lose 3 or 4 thousand for their rentals, and they're nasty, they cheat me, but I get a lot more. What do I get back? I get me. What's me? Who I really am supposed to be, a kind person. And that's what the purpose of life is. So you see, I've experienced a little bit of result from my vows. What's that little bit of result? That if you're kind, you may get cheated 10 times, but the one time that people believe in you, the benefit is huge. Huge. last time when we had a certain business deal with a certain person, an agency, and we lost 200 whatever thousand dollars, remember? Well, I don't know. I was very upset. I was very unhappy. And I was very, very embarrassed. And I didn't know how to talk to the sponsor. And I said to myself, no. I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. I trusted, I wrote the check, I gave it. If they wish to cheat me, that's their choice. But I'm going to hold my dignity and I'm going to forgive them. And whatever my sponsors and everybody else thinks about me, it's my ego. I'm going to forgive that person and just continue. I'm not going to give up. And it worked. In fact, from that experience, the inner circle of people that's worked with me, I commend their respect even more. And I want to tell you something, because I held my vows. So when I held my vows, I had that experience. People respect you even more, and people like you, and people believe in you. And through that way, you can even affect other people's lives. That's a taste. You know, that's an experience. So imagine if I can taste that, what my guru feels, how my guru is going to help hundreds of thousands of people. So what's my point? My point is, it's time for us to stop doubting our gurus. It's time for us to stop doubting the Dharma. It's time for us to stop doubting the path of goodness. It's time for us to stop doubting compassion. And it's time for us to stop doubting the vows. It's time for us to believe and experience. Because up till now, we've been living without it. And it hasn't been very good. And the future doesn't have any good portents either. Because it's just old age and death and that's it. So since we've been living this long and it's not been that fabulous, in the future we can see that it doesn't have any great portents either. Why don't we adopt Dharma practice now? So for me, Dharma practice is not hard. It's not difficult. Holding my vows is effortless. And I'll tell you why. A, because I've been at it for the last 30 years. So I have a little time ahead. I'll be very honest. Because I've been at it for the last 30 years. Okay? I wasn't born this holy schmoly from some kind of lotus and I'm like, Om Mani Padme Hum, and you give me the vows, it's just symbolic, but I'm pure. No. Nobody ever wrote in the Chronicles of Temenggu that he's an emanation of Avalokiteshvara. Nobody. Nobody wrote in the Chronicles of that he's born from the heart of a lotus of Amitabha's, you know, third eye. Nobody. So what I'm saying is, whatever they want to say about my previous lives, your previous life, it doesn't matter. What matters is right now. How do you react? You have a situation in your home right now. How do you react? How will you act? And sorry, how you act. How you act, right? And how you feel doesn't matter. You think that how you act, how you will feel about yourself 1 year later. Because you're a young lady with conscience. How would you feel if you were nasty or mean or not nice 1 year later? You get the instant satisfaction. Not long term. And then when it's not long term, you have to cover it. So the thing is this, is that how will you deal with it right now? How I would deal with it is help them. You do lose. It's like, it's, you don't have to, and it's unfair, and maybe it might even damage them, but it's too lesser of the two evils. And it's more difficult to do that, but it's better. Because you don't lose yourself. You don't want to lose yourself. What does it mean? Your real self. When we're happy, it means we've been kind. When we're happy, we know we've done the right thing. When we've done the right thing, we're happy. That's real happiness. That one no one can take away. So it's time to stop doubting our gurus, to stop doubting the path, and stop doubting the Dharma or the vows, because we use that as an excuse not to push further. Oh, my guru did that, I'm going away. Bye, I don't believe in him anymore. You know, I want to have a normal life. You know, I want to just live. That's all BS. It's not about the guru, it's about yourself. It's about yourself. So therefore, if you experience from meditation or from time, meaning holding the vows from time, or applying the principles of compassion, the 8 verses to your mind, and you feel some results, from people respecting you, people like you, and you find it easier to let go and you feel more happier, that is the result. That is the result. Nothing, don't look for bigger things at this moment. That is the result. When you get that result, when we're sitting here and we're having a good time, and we have this wonderful relationship and we're going to do good things together, that is the result. That's what we want as human beings. See, if you talk about enlightenment or bodhisattva or becoming a maha bodhisattva, that's a little far for all of us. But right now what we have, this is the result. This is a result. Our relationship with each other is very pure. Why is it pure? Because we're not here to use each other. We're not here to get something from each other. We're here to work as a team. And even when we're not working, we're together, and we really enjoy this. We really enjoy this. Why? Because there's no walls and no barriers and no show. It's just yourself, your bare self. And that's very nice. It's very nice to be yourself with people, and they are themselves with you. So that's the result of Dharma practice. That is the result of what we want to experience. And trust me, when you experience that more and more and more, you want to do more Dharma. Vows are effortless. And then people give you tantric vows, you're like, why not? Because it's just a flow of things. We have some experience. The reason we lose faith is we don't have experience. The reason we don't experience is we don't apply ourselves. Does that make sense? So people who practice, they never lose faith. That's why, even after your gurus passed away, how come for some people, even their gurus have passed away 20, 30 years already, but they can sustain their practice, they can get stronger, they can do more and more and more. Why? Because the guru's inside of them. How is the guru inside of them? Because their guru is not the physical person. It's the experience they have experienced from practicing his teachings. So when the guru has taught you something, you've applied it, and you've gotten that experience, even if your guru is not around, you will still increase that practice and become better and better. Why? Because the guru is inside of you. What's that guru? The experience you have received from the practice that changed your mind. That's the guru. So for some people say, oh, well, Rinpoche's not around, I'm not near Rinpoche, or I don't know what's going on, or I doubt Rinpoche, I'm not going to practice. They just go off real quick. It's very clear. They're level. It's very frustrating. So people have very supreme faith in their lamas. Supreme faith in their lamas, they have practice. That's why even when it comes to Gosan, when it comes to the level of the lamas, some people are blown away by a lama who sits on a very high throne. Some people are blown away by lamas who have big titles and big hats, and they are famous and well-known. And so if it's a well-known guru, the famous guru, they run, they feel it's better. That shows you their level of the lama. Because what a high-level guru is teaching you, what a famous guru is teaching you, or an ordinary guru is teaching you, or the simple old monk in your house is teaching you, is exactly the same message. And if you practice that message and you gain that experience, it doesn't matter whether the guru is high or low, you will have faith in your guru. You will have faith. So people who run around to different gurus, run around to different teachers, they feel excited about it. Most of the time it's because they have not experienced anything in their lives. So they feel that, oh, I'm with this guru, but if I'm with a more famous guru, a better guru, maybe I have experienced more, that I can come back and serve my guru better. I mean, they have all kinds of twisted thoughts. That's not the issue. If that is the case, then all of us should never take refuge with ordinary gurus. We should take refuge with the top. Only the top. Only the best. But how is that possible? How is that possible? But if we not experience the guru or experience the teaching, if we not experience guru, not experience teaching, then another possibility is we look for big gurus. We run for big gurus' teachings. We run for big gurus' assembly. And we see that if a lot of people go there, then it must be a very good guru because there's a lot of people. But then again, there's a lot of people just like them, no confidence in themselves. So therefore, in the Tibetan system, whether your guru is high or low, or big status, or sits on a throne, or a normal ordinary monk, or high Rinpoche, it doesn't matter. If you take the essence of the teachings and you put it in your heart and you practice, you'll experience the power of guru. Because the experience of power of guru is not really the person. It is how you act after you gain the experience. The peace and happiness you feel. That is a real guru. Why? Because the purpose of having a guru is to become a guru, to find a guru in you, to become a Buddha. So therefore, if you don't find a guru in you, you look for high-level gurus. This guru's got 16 incarnations, this guru's got 30 incarnations. Oh, I need to know about his previous life. Oh, wow, he's emanating, he's got this magical power. You know, he has clairvoyance, run there, he can change my life. He can't. They can't. Everybody around these gurus must have changed them. That everybody around these high-power gurus must be perfect and changed and transformed. In fact, the cases around these gurus of people transform even less than ordinary gurus. Why? Because they have no self-confidence, so they feel that the mob is there, or it's bigger power, it's bigger name, there's something there. That's human design. Does that make sense? You think about it. So therefore, if we have a simple old monk, or a simple old nun, or just a simple old teacher, just very simple with no status, if we stick with our teacher loyally all the way, we will get the experience. We will. We don't need to run here, we don't need to run there, we don't know to be here, we don't know to go through nothing. Because why? What we experience is a result already. That comes from the teaching. Running here and there, in fact, it sets a very bad example. Hence I said in Ganden Monastery, where you live in an environment of such holy gurus, so many holy masters, holy, you don't see us running back and forth. We stick to our own. Some monks even have teachers that are very simple geshis. Their teachers are not high gurus. They don't even run there, but they respect very much. Because they have their teachers, and they do their meditation to get the results. It's very, very clear. And whatever people say about our guru, whatever people say about our teacher, if we have experience of practicing and getting results of his teaching, we'll never have doubt. Why will we never ever have doubt? Because we have experienced it. If we have doubt, and they're able to give that doubt to us, it's because we haven't experienced it. We haven't experienced it, and we won't experience it with another teacher. Why? Because we're just running away from ourselves. That, oh, this teacher is normal, and they said some bad things, they said this rumor, oh, my teacher practices a knife, and his teacher practices a spoon, and the spoon is better than the knife is not good. So we're going to leave the knife teacher, we're going to go to the spoon practicing tomorrow. And then, no, you're actually running away from yourself. Because the spoon and the knife is just the outer thing. The real inner thing is mind transformation. A teacher who just gives initiations and tantric teachings and encourages that is someone we have to be careful of. A teacher that focuses on mind training and mind transformation, we should flock to them, it says in the scriptures. Why is that in the Lamrim? Why? That's what it's about. That's what it's really about. The more, thank you, dying so sweet. You don't look like an aardvark at all with that. Three lifetimes. But the best way to help them is that you apply to yourself. That's why people say, oh, but Buddhism is a non-action type of religion where you go into the mountain and escape. There are people who go into the mountains and escape and pretend they're meditating. There are. But there are also people like Buddha Shakyamuni who said, no, I can do more if I'm a Buddha. I can do much more if I'm a Buddha. So for all of their sake, I will put all my energy into practice and become a Buddha. And that's the best point. So therefore, how to help them? By helping yourself. Doesn't that make more sense? What you thinking?
That reminds me of a discussion I had with someone once. He said that the Christians are doing the biggest work in terms of relief work and aid to war-torn countries and famines. And that, oh, you know, Buddha's just sitting in a cave and meditating. How are they actually helping the world situation? And yeah, this really makes sense to me.
And they are helping also is because they're adding to the peace of the world long term by transforming the world. You can wipe someone's diaper over and over, you can feed someone over and over, but their mind is still unhappy. If they're unhappy, they'll need to be fed, they'll need to be taken care of again and again. It doesn't ever end. There's no end ever. So if you practice, you become a fully enlightened being. Never mind just cleaning and giving them food, you can do so much more. You can do that and so much more. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So myself, when I see someone that has failed, they go away. I make an internal commitment that I'm going to practice all day. When I see someone is very happy and I change their lives, I make an internal commitment I'm going to practice harder and I'm going to do it. Because both ways inspire me. Because it's not about me. But they did something good, I rejoice, I had something to do with it. They did something bad, I am sad because I am responsible. A true Buddhist takes responsibility for everyone. A true Buddhist. So how do you do that? By getting into a guilt fit and throwing BS and complaining, no, you do your practice harder. How? Enforce your laws. The next opportunity that comes along that people are going to be funny with you, be kind of. Without letting them take advantage of you. That's how you practice. And when you do that over and over and over, you will definitely gain experience. You gain happiness, and then the immediate result of that will be people respect you, people like you, people hang around, people want to be with you, people listen to you. You shouldn't be hung up on that, but you should think, oh, I have a little bit of result of joy, I'll do more. Not for the basking in the light or the respect or the money or the fame. No. More that's just a side product. You wouldn't be doing something for the side product. Example, if you got really bad cancer and you take the chemotherapy and then it's getting rid of your fevers, that's great. But you don't keep doing that for getting rid of the fevers, you do that to get rid of the cancer and everything else to go away, the headaches and etc. Similarly, if you do a little bit of Dharma practice and people praise you and you get carried away by that, that's ridiculous. Because that's not what you did it for in the beginning. So you just go deeper and deeper and deeper. Dharma practitioners are humble. Real Dharma practitioners are very humble. They're truly, sometimes they will show arrogance, sometimes they show like they're somebody, but if you look at them closely and you observe them over time, they're very humble. Why are they very humble? Not because they're trying to, because their natural state of mind is happiness. They're not insecure to show up. They don't need to show up. So they're humble not because they're trying to be. They're humble because they have no need to show up. They have no need to bask in the light or to draw attention to themselves. They have no need. So they are naturally humble. You get what I mean? They're not trying to be. Real Dharma practitioners find joy in people's pain because they find an opportunity to help. So they're not happy that they're in pain. They're so happy to help. They don't look at people suffering and go, oh no, more work. They look at them and say, I'm going to help. Like, oh, you know, they're joyous to help, not joyous in their pain. Real Dharma practitioners, when they see people happy, they're very joyous. Either way, their minds don't change. Because real Dharma practitioners, either way, your minds are motivated to let this go. Does that make sense? Either way. So that's why now for us here, most of us at this table, and most of us in our organization, we have reached a level that we have to stop blaming the guru, the teaching, our Dharma brothers and sisters, and situations for our lack of practice, for our lack of faith, or us running away, or not staying, or not going. We have to do that already. Why? It's not about them. But that's just an escape. So people who've been with their gurus for 6, 7, 8 years, when they talk against the guru, when they talk against the Dharma, when they say negative things about Dharma brothers and sisters, it's very, very sad because they're still at that level. They're still at the level. What level? The level is that they have not experienced any type of compassion. They have not experienced any type of care or concern for others. Not experienced any. Why? Because they have applied no effort. And so therefore, when they have applied no effort and they have not experienced any type of compassion or love, that will apply to their other parts of their lives, in job, in relationship, in friendship. Whatever they do will be basically some sort of failure. You get what I mean? The opposite end is that these people sometimes will be very successful in worldly business to cover their bills. You'll see two times. Does that make sense? So they do more. They show off more. They have bigger cars, bigger rings, whatever. They show off their lack of success. They know they feel empty inside. They don't feel happy. They don't know why people don't respect them. They don't know why. So therefore, there's the other type of people who they have not experienced compassion because they have not given it. You see, you experience compassion when you give it, not when you get it. When you experience it, you give it, then you get it without wanting it. These people who feel that, after 5, 6, 7 years with the guru, they won't blame anyone. They won't even look for another guru. Even students of the gurus, they won't look for other gurus, other senses, other traditions. Why? They've experienced it and they've got some result. If they don't get result, they won't get result anywhere. Very unlikely. Rare cases there are because they find their own lineage, you know. Rare cases that they have a stronger karmic connection to another lineage. There's rare cases. But also, these kind of people usually in other parts of their life, in relationship, in friendship, in personal development, in money, and in jobs, they're also failures. Why? Because their character is that way. So of course, in spiritual practice, they'll be inverted commas failures. Why? Because that's their mode of being or their mode of function with every part of their life. So usually they fail in everything. And then they use more and more and more tactics to get your attention or your sympathy and help. And the more they do, the more disgusted you become, because you get an experience of what they are like. You experience what they're like. So whatever they do now, you're like, Even if they give you a glass of water, you're like, Exactly. And you're afraid to be around them. And consequently, they become more lonely. They become more segregated. They become more marginalized. And they become more unhappy. And it becomes worse and worse. How do you help them? You have to practice more. You have to practice more. And sometimes we have to realize that some of these people in this life, we won't be able to help them. Not in this life. So not helping them in this life isn't breaking your vows or giving up on them. It's that you're going back and building yourself up for the war. You know, you go back into your training camp and you build yourself up for the real fight. Meaning, you develop more compassion, you become more stronger, you become more firm, so you can help them in future life. Because it isn't about one life. You understand that, Paris? How do you feel?
I'm guilty.